Hello and welcome to Supernatural. We're on a quest to make the extraordinary ordinary and unlock the greatness that lives in every human being. Thanks for joining us. My guest today is Ashlyn Burnett. Ashlyn is a board certified health coach with a Bachelor of Science in Integrative Healthcare and also a certified polyvagal informed coach. She teaches women to break free from the binge or restrict eating cycle and helps them find peace with food through intuitive eating, nervous system regulation, and body-led habits. After years of struggling with dieting, health issues, and disconnection from herself, she now teaches others how to eat with trust, live without obsession, and reconnect to their innate body wisdom. Now, Ashlyn and I first met at the Holistic Health Clinic when I was getting some pretty major dental work done. And since then, Ashlyn has become a very trusted source of support and a friend to my entire family, really. So it's been almost a year now since our last conversation when I came on your show. So hopefully we're both a year wiser, but I know it's going to be a great conversation. I'm super excited. I have a ton that I want to ask you. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Chad. I'm so excited to be here and cannot wait to see where this conversation goes.
Yes. Now, it seems like today there's this growing push to quantify and measure our health with the aid of technology. There's an app or a gadget for everything. You know, get your sleep score, count your steps, monitor your blood glucose, measure your telomere length, and people think that their numbers and their scores are the only indicator of their health. But in my opinion, as a result, we've really become so disconnected from ourselves, from our body's innate wisdom, and from an inner knowing of true health. So what's the problem with quantifying health, and what does true health look like to you?
Wow, I love that question, Tad. Yeah, I really think that we obsess over the data side of health because we have a lack of trust in the body. And it's almost like we overdevelop the brain, the analytical part of us, to try and grasp on for a sense of control. And I specifically focus a lot on this when it comes to eating and food. And we see this blowing up all over the world right now with CGMs, measuring our blood sugar, and calorie tracking apps, and even like AI apps that will calculate your calories in your food now and tell you how much you need to eat. And there's like so much of this focus on, if you just perfect your health, if you just perfect the data, if you perfect the numbers, then you can have perfect health. You can be in a lean body. You can feel amazing. And what I found through my own journey, because I'll be the first to raise my hand and say that I was obsessed with the data and the numbers and all the things, and I realized that it never brought me to the health and the freedom, especially with food, that I was wanting and the body that I was wanting, because it disconnected me from my innate guide and my innate wisdom. And I really do see it as a misaligned coping mechanism when we don't trust ourselves, because if we don't have trust in the body and we don't have trust in the feeling and the sensation of everything happening from the neck down, then of course we're going to have to lean on something else. And that just so happens to be our brain and numbers. I explain this to clients, like, imagine you go to the gym and you like only ever do leg day, like you never strengthen your upper body. And then you're like complaining that your legs are so strong and your arms are so weak. And it's like, well, duh, like you never strengthen your upper body. Of course that's happening. And same thing with thinking versus feeling. If we're constantly thinking and seeing the world through numbers and information and logic, and we don't practice feeling and we're not connected to our body, of course the thinking becomes stronger than the feeling, and we just strengthen that pathway of seeing life through numbers instead of feeling our way through life. And yeah, I could go so much more with that, because there's so many reasons why we choose to think instead of feel, but really it's disconnecting from self and using external things to guide our choices instead of internal connection to self. Like even when you go to the doctor, they don't just like look at your blood work and be like, you're fine. They're like, how do you feel? Like, do you feel good? And I think we've kind of lost that in our health obsessed world of like letting internal feelings guide us, not just data and numbers and all the things that you mentioned.
There's so much there, and we will unpack all of that. But I think if you really take it to the extreme, the analytical approach, living in the mind, quantifying everything, you see there's people out here doing that. There's these extreme biohackers who are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars per year getting everything measured, supplementing. There's one in particular that I'm thinking of, and you probably know exactly who I'm talking about, but he doesn't necessarily look well to me. There's something missing when it comes to that radiant, vibrant look of health. And I think you're absolutely right that at the core, it's because there's a lack of trust. We're trying to control. We're driven by fear, almost like I don't want to get old and I don't want to die, rather than I'm pursuing health because I love life and I love my body. And this is one of the many things I love about what you do, is you are not about surface level change. You're about getting under the hood, looking at the root cause. You're showing people that it's not about being stricter with your diet or more disciplined with your workout plan. It's not about doing the affirmations or the mindset hacks or having more willpower. You're actually helping them understand that there are these deeper root patterns that are governing their surface level behaviors. Mm-hmm. And if we can get to the root of the problem, the surface level actions change naturally without needing to force them or encounter struggle. And I think that this level of wisdom can only really come from someone who has lived it themselves and persevered through their own struggles. So tell us a little bit about your story and how it's shaped what you do today.
Yeah, I struggled with so many things, not just food. I know now my business and, you know, what I share on social media is very focused on food and body and that sort of realm, but I had my own journey with health issues, with gut issues ever since I was an infant, a lot of skin issues and acne, as well as mental health struggles, anxiety, depression, suicide, all of those sorts of things. And I did all of the surface level stuff for so long. Like, I went to traditional therapy, I took antidepressants, I saw like eating disorder specialists and did like the normal, you know, Western approach to healing these things. And it never brought me permanent relief. I would say it, you know, basically saved my life in some cases, but I didn't have like that same feeling of, oh, I'm free, I'm healed. Like, I've evolved from this phase of my journey and I'm stepping into this new version of myself. Like, I didn't feel like that. It was still kind of like lingering in the background. And I hear a lot of people talk about that with disordered eating. It's like, oh, you'll never be fully recovered. It's something that you just have to manage for the rest of your life. And people say that with a lot of conditions. It's like, oh, you have to manage it. You have to avoid your triggers. And that didn't sit right with me. I was like, I don't want to live in that reality. Like, I want full healing. I want full freedom. And the thing that did bring me the full healing and the full freedom was doing that deeper work that you are talking about and really going into my nervous system, into my body, because I had a lot of stored trauma and emotions and parts of me and patterns that were playing out in all of these different areas of my life. And it was all connected. Like, okay, maybe I had behaviors with food, binging, overeating, undereating, restricting, obsessing about food. But I also had, you know, obsessive behaviors in other areas of my life with like organization and perfectionism and, you know, pushing myself to the limit. I was a competitive dancer growing up and I would often come home after practice and literally throw up because I would like push myself so hard to the point of just complete exhaustion. And from the outside, like, you might think those things are unrelated, but I learned that they were absolutely connected to this part of me that was a perfectionist and the part of me that was a control freak and the part of me that didn't feel safe in my body, the part of me that was really insecure and didn't feel worthy, the part of me that was a people pleaser, the part of me that had all of these like little T traumas from childhood that I hadn't processed. I can say that I was blessed with a very beautiful childhood, and from the outside it might look like nothing, you know, quote unquote bad happened, but as we know, trauma comes in different flavors and there's a spectrum of trauma. And there were a lot of little things that happened in childhood that I hadn't processed or didn't have the tools to process. And they created little like kinks in my nervous system that my body was holding on to. And so then of course I was looking for relief from all of this internal pressure that had accumulated in my body. And I found relief through food, through over-exercising, through pushing myself in all areas, through beating myself up, being super hard on myself. Like those were the parts of me that were actually trying to save me from that internal pressure. And once I healed those things and, you know, brought healing, resolution, did a lot of somatic work, nervous system work, and this is an ongoing journey. It's not like I'm sitting here and claiming to be God in some way.
That's this right.
This is a path. I'm still doing that work now, but really in the beginning, I felt like it was almost like a boot camp, you know, where there's like so much happening and so much turning over in your internal world. And almost effortlessly, my relationship with food shifted. My relationship with work started to shift with people in my life. And it wasn't because I was like using more willpower or trying to like affirmation my way to self-love. Like I didn't sit in front of the mirror and be like, I love myself. I love myself. Like I tried that and it didn't work.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. Yeah. I had to have like a deeper cellular shift of remembering who I was by meeting my pain. It wasn't by ignoring my pain. It was by actually like sitting with the not enoughness and feeling that until it dissolved and feeling the part of me that wanted to grip on and control everything because I felt terrified of losing control and not having anybody to lean on and being alone. Like I had to sit with all of that pain over and over and over until that story loosened its grip and then my behaviors as a result changed. So yeah, this is something that I now teach and guide other humans through, because I don't think there is another way to do it. I think if we want freedom and permanent healing, we have to go through that deeper journey.
Beautiful. I agree with you. There's, I think, and people will take different views on this depending on their unique experience and sort of their individual makeup, I would say, the different paths to transformation. Mm-hmm. Some people say that you can just make it easy and kind of bypass, and maybe that's worked for people, but that hasn't been my experience. That hasn't been my truth. For me, it's like the deeper you go within yourself, you really do have to meet the uncomfortable parts of yourself and integrate that shadow, darker side, and really bring light and love to that. But you can't just think your way to that. You really need to go deep within and do the soul searching. And it's uncomfortable, but it's so rewarding. And so I think our experiences definitely align in that sense. And I'm so glad that you brought up the interconnectedness between the different parts of us, that we are these multidimensional, multifaceted beings who exist as, yes, as physical beings, but also on a mental, emotional, spiritual level. And I think this is hard for people to see, especially early on in the journey. It could be a very foreign concept to think that, how could my anxiety or my overthinking be related to the food that I put into my body? Or how can all these different symptoms and problems and imbalances and pain points in my life really be connected when they seem so separate? And this is what I really want to unpack today. I think what we'll do is we'll start with the food and maybe kind of peel back the layers and get deeper and deeper. But this is one of the main areas that you specialize in, is helping people transform their relationship with food, which can take the form of many kind of subtle and insidious unconscious patterns. Everything from binge eating to constantly thinking about food to emotional self-soothing, even an unhealthy obsession with fitness or body image. And food is such a big part of our culture and our communities and bringing people together. But I think it is also probably our biggest vice. And I would say pretty much every human being has learned to use food in unhealthy ways to cope, to stimulate, to suppress emotions. But again, this is not something you could really measure with a number on a scale, or how I look in the mirror, or the amount of Instagram likes I get. And unless you've done a tremendous amount of inner work, this can be a difficult one for people to see and evaluate their relationship with food, honestly. So how do we measure this? How do we know when we have come to a place of having a healthy relationship with food in our lives?
Yeah, such a good question. I like to look at children as examples and models of this because, like you said, most adults have something going on with food, and it's such a socially acceptable coping tool that we have that it's very rare to actually find somebody who I would say is, I call them natural eaters, like somebody who is eating the way that they were designed to eat. But children, if they've grown up in a home that doesn't have parents who are dieting or struggling with food in any way, they naturally eat in this way, and it's very connected to their bodies. It's not a brain thing. They're not thinking ahead to what they're gonna have later on this week, so they need to like pull back now and eat lighter now. They're not like planning their meals according to the clock. They're not, you know, feeling bad about eating goldfish when they're hungry, if that's the only thing that's available. Like, it's very in the moment, and truly the only way we can ever eat like connected to ourselves is by eating in the now, because eating happens in the now. The body, the stomach, the digestive system, it doesn't exist on a future or past timeline. It happens in the present. And usually when we are eating disconnected, it's because we are living in the head, we're making a choice from the brain, and we're overriding the body's cues. So we're eating, even though we're full, we keep eating because it tastes so good. Like, that's a thought that's happening. Or we're full and we're eating because we're at the movie theater and there's popcorn and we should eat at the movie theater. Or we're eating because it's noon and it's lunchtime, even though we're not hungry yet. And so we can look at kids and see how they stay very present in moment to moment, and they're very connected to their visceral sensations in their body, hunger, satiety, taste, preference. They're super, super connected to these sensations that exist in their body. And just like you mentioned, the only reason we ever veer from that normal eating rhythm is because of thoughts and our nervous system. It's because of the brain, it's because of emotions, and we learn through life to buffer ourselves from life with either eating or not eating. So it can go both directions. People who are underweight and are restricting themselves from food and have more of that, you know, under eating pattern, they're also using a lack of food to buffer them from intensity and sensation. And then on the other end, we have people who are eating past fullness, they're overeating, they're maybe binge eating, they're over consuming what they need. And that's another very clear example of how we are buffering ourselves from life with food. And we're distracting ourselves from feelings, from sensations, by putting a little extra padding in the stomach. And there can be so many reasons why we do that, and that's really what I unpack and would love to go deeper with you here around that. But that is the only reason we ever override our body. And so if we connect in with the deeper work and we heal those reasons, we all have this built-in guide around food. We have a built-in compass that tells us when to eat, what to eat, how much to eat, and most of us have just overridden that for so many years, or disconnected from that for so many years, that we feel like we're broken. Like, we feel like, oh, I need to go on to Ozempic. I need a GLP-1. I was watching a commercial last night for a GLP-1, and they were talking about how, like, this woman, she was like, this is the only thing that helped me lose weight, and I'm feeling so much better. And of course, I want everybody to do what they need to do to feel good. Like, that's not what this is about. Whenever I see somebody who is living in a body who is over or under nourished, and no judgment, because I've been there myself too, it's always because there's something deeper going on. And I don't see it as like, oh, this person needs a GLP-1 or this person needs some Weight Watchers diet. Like, they're disconnected from their body's boundaries. They're eating when they're not hungry. They're eating past fullness. They're, you know, ignoring body cues. They can't hear body cues. And so they think they need to like find something outside of themselves to, you know, release weight or change their body, when like the real answer is coming back in to themselves and reconnecting with themselves. And it's probably not because you have a slow metabolism or you have bad genes or your blood sugar is a mess. Like, maybe those things could be going on, but 9 times out of 10, I have clients come to me and they're like, hey, I have a slow metabolism. That's why I can't release weight. And I'm like, are you eating when you're actually hungry and stopping when you feel spacious and nourished? And they're like, no. And I'm like, okay, well, let's start there and let's see what happens. Because even if you have a slow metabolism, if you're connected to your body and you're eating within your body's boundaries, like kids do, your body doesn't want to carry excess. Your body doesn't want to be unhealthy. So I know I kind of went off on a path there, but kids are really a great example of how we are designed to eat.
I love that answer. And absolutely, the body is so intelligent and it knows exactly what it needs, knows how much it needs. It knows how to bring itself back to homeostasis. And I think that our modern world has just led to so much disconnection from ourselves and our innate knowing. And I can definitely speak from experience that it's taken me years to really reconnect with that inner wisdom and mm-hmm. the intelligence of my body. And I find that as I continue this journey, as I continue to clean out, remove the toxicity, as I heal the deeper emotional patterns, as I question my belief systems, it becomes easier and easier just to know and to have an open dialogue with the body. It's like the body yeah. will speak directly to you. It'll tell you what it wants to eat, when to stop. It'll tell you how much sunlight it wants, how much movement, everything to continue its healing and up-leveling. And to me, that's returning to a true relationship with the body, when you can get to that place and just trust that it might not make sense to my mind. Like, okay, why is my body telling me that I want to fast today, that I don't want yeah. food, when my mind is telling me I want all the food in my pantry or my fridge?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, I don't know why, but I'm just going to trust the body, because the body always knows.
Yes.
And like I said, it's taken me a long, long time to return to that place. I think we all kind of come in with that mm-hmm. Level of knowing when we're children. But to me, that's true. What you called natural eating, or mm-hmm. I think what you could term intuitive eating. Now, I think intuitive eating has become this trendy thing online where everybody is saying, I teach intuitive eating, and a lot of times it's not. And you, I've seen on social media, you're not afraid to criticize this. So I'd love for you to explain, what is the problem with the idea of intuitive eating in so many of these communities, and what do you advocate for instead?
Yeah. Oh, this is such a good topic, because I get a lot of hate for this on social media. I get a lot of pushback on this, because there's so many different versions of intuitive eating. And that's really the problem, is like, we're all calling it intuitive eating, but like, what are we actually talking about? And I know the original method was coined by two women who wrote this book, and it's like, they probably even have a trademark or something on it. Like, there's an actual real method, and I have like read their principles and I agree with some of them. I disagree with others, but it's kind of gotten so popular on social media that everyone who promotes anything other than like counting your calories calls it intuitive eating. And there's so much that I see that is so misaligned from natural eating. And a lot of it is, I call it kind of like food freedom culture, where people have been maybe obsessed with food in some way for a long period of time. Maybe they have been on like really restrictive diets, or they're counting calories, or they're obsessed with protein. Like, they're in this really like tight, rigid world with food. And at some point they have this inner rebel that comes up and is like, screw it all, I want freedom, I don't want to do this anymore. And they enter food freedom land, also known as intuitive eating land sometimes, where people are saying, eat whatever you want, whenever you want. The only way to heal your relationship with food is to remove all rules around food, all boundaries around food. If you're thinking about food, it means you're hungry, it means you need to eat. If you're like having a craving, you should honor that craving and eat that craving. If you're missing your period, you need to eat 2,500 calories a day and, you know, pound it back. Doesn't matter if you're full, just keep eating. Like, there's all of this stuff, and like, that's disconnection from the body. That's eating from the brain. We're still making decisions about food based on rules, based on, okay, now the new rule is I just honor all my cravings. The new rule is, whenever I think about food, I need to eat food. The new rule is like, I need to show myself that I'm eating enough by just eating breakfast 5 seconds after I wake up, even if I'm not hungry. A lot of the wellness culture stuff to me also is very disordered. It's very like, you need to eat 30 grams of protein per meal. Well, what if I don't want protein in this meal? What if I am craving fruit? Like, can I do that? What if I wake up and I'm not hungry, but everyone online says it ruins my hormones if I skip breakfast? You know, what if I want to just have carbs alone and everyone online is saying that my blood sugar is going to be a mess? Like, that whole world, I know some of that's wellness culture, some of it's intuitive eating, some of it's food freedom. Like, I still see that as quote unquote disordered eating. Food is not in order when we're eating that way. And the way that I teach eating, this natural eating framework, is really connected to the body. It's based on how your body and your stomach feel, and eating when your body is ready to receive food. There's actual space in your body for that food, and stopping when you feel lightly nourished. I don't go into the world of like, you need to stuff yourself full of food to prove that you're eating enough. I don't believe that that is the way that we're designed to eat, and you don't see kids do that, and you don't see natural eaters do that. And we need to reconnect with that stopping point of eating that is, even in like, I think it's Okinawa, they talk about like harahabachihu or something. And it's this concept of like eating until you're 80% full. And it's one of their blue zone beliefs around like longevity. And that concept is like something that we've lost in society around, we don't want to stuff our stomachs full to the brim of food, just like we don't stuff a washing machine full to the brim with clothes. Like, we leave room for digestion. And this is how kids eat. This is how natural eaters eat. And so that is what I teach, is natural eating in connection with hunger and satiety and taste preference and choosing food that we actually enjoy and letting the body create a rhythm with eating, as opposed to honoring every single craving just because our brain is asking for it. Okay, your brain might be asking for a donut at 8 a.m., but like, does your body actually want that? Is that going to feel good in your body? Because we have taste buds in our body, in our digestive system, just as much as we do in our mouth. And so yes, that might taste good to your mouth, but is that going to taste good to your body? Is that going to feel good in your body? And like, that's natural eating. That's not food freedom. That is actual connection to what's going to feel good for me in this moment.
Yeah, I love how you describe this concept of freedom. And I think that people associate freedom with this reckless abandonment of rules, and freedom equals the absence of all structure. And they think, I'm just going to be free and wild and be a rebel. And as you said, that's not true freedom. That's bypassing freedom without doing the inner work to uncover why you don't feel free in the first place.
Yes.
And I have a coach who talks about the difference between freedom from and freedom to. So Are you pursuing food freedom because you're running away from your own fears and insecurities and unworthiness? Or are you pursuing food freedom because you want to be free to live a healthy, vibrant life, to go out and serve your purpose and have the energy and the clarity to do so? And so it's really about coming back to a knowing of what freedom is, and knowing that freedom comes from something far deeper than scrapping all the rules and restrictions and putting a fancy, trendy title on that, like intuitive eating. And so I love how you address that, the tendency for escapism, I would call it.
Yeah.
Before we get into some of the more deeper psychosomatic roots of all these behaviors and ways of thinking, something you mentioned briefly was calories. There's this idea that the way that you lose weight or become healthier or even gain weight for people like athletes is by counting calories. Mm-hmm. I know I've seen you also speak about the calorie myth, but do you, you know, believe in calories and the way we measure calories to begin with, or do you think that's a flawed model?
Yeah. Oh, you know what I'm going to say, Chad, but yeah, it's not that calories don't exist. Like, I'm not somebody who's going to be like, calories don't exist. Calories in, calories out doesn't matter. Like, of course it matters. It's thermodynamics, it's energy balance. But the issue is the model of calories has so many holes in it, and I love to poke holes in it to get into the science of like, what is this thing that we like worship nowadays and think is such solid science? You know, everyone out there is like, oh, if you want to lose weight, you just need to be in a calorie deficit. If you want to gain weight, you need to be in a calorie surplus. And okay, great. I can get behind the idea that you need to eat less than your body needs, or you need to eat more than your body needs to shift your weight. But calories themselves were invented by this guy named Wilbur Atwater in the 1800s. This is old, old science. This is not like modern science. And he took foods and he put them in this container inside another container, inside a thing of water, and he lit them on fire and he measured how much heat was produced to figure out like how much energy is in this food. But he only measured, I think it was like 10 different foods, and they were foods that they were eating back then, like what people would call farm foods. So they're not, you know, protein powders and all these cereals that we're eating nowadays and all these crazy, you know, superfoods. And like, there's so much, even whole foods that we eat nowadays that people back then, you know, didn't really eat that often. And he took the averages from those foods that he measured and he just extrapolated it to all foods, like based on carbs, proteins, and fats. He was like, okay, there's about 4 grams or 4 calories per gram in carbs and protein and 9 in fats. And let's just like assume that that's the same for all foods. And that in of itself is like so flawed, because it's actually probably not the case. And who's to say that like a Japanese sweet potato has the same calories as an orange sweet potato? Like, I know when I eat them, they feel very different in my body. My own internal calorie-o-meter, my internal calorie calculator feels differently. And my Fitness Pal doesn't know that. And then we go even further with this, that our unique bodies digest and absorb calories differently depending on our microbiome and our metabolism and our thyroid and our muscle mass and our liver health and the way our nervous system is actually feeling in that moment affects how many of those calories we absorb and break down. And then when we combine foods in different ratios, it impacts it. So if we combine carbs with fiber or fat with fiber, it's going to change it, as opposed to if we just eat fat alone. Fiber is going to bind to some of those calories and they're not going to get absorbed as easily in the body. If we cook food, we change the calorie amounts in it. If we blend food, if we chop food, like there's so many variables here. And this is when people say, okay, I'm counting my calories perfectly, I'm tracking my calories, and like my weight isn't shifting either up or down depending on what they're wanting. And I always say, like, that's because you could count and weigh and measure perfectly, but you have no idea what's happening once that food enters your mouth. You have no idea if those calories are even accurate on the label in the package. They can have a 20% margin up or down. And so there's so much gray here that doesn't get accounted for with calories. However, the solution to all of this is your body has a built-in calorie calculator. Your body is so much smarter than MyFitnessPal or Chronometer or any app that you're using, and it knows exactly how many calories you're eating, you're absorbing, you're breaking down, whether the food is lightly cooked, very cooked, blended, chopped, whether you're combining it with other things. Your body has nutrient receptors in your digestive system that break down food and literally like add it up. I mean, it's not numbers, but it knows how much your body is eating. And then it communicates that information to you in the form of physical feelings like hunger, satiety, fullness, taste. And so your job isn't to open your phone and check your app and see how many calories you have left. Your job is to connect in and ask myself, how am I feeling right now? Is my body asking for more food, or am I okay? Is my body hungry, or is my body full? Is this food tasting good to me anymore? Or does it taste kind of mundane and average, and that's a sign that I can stop now? So it can be really freeing. This is the real freedom, because we're not abandoning rules. We're not abandoning boundaries. We have built-in boundaries with food coming from our body, and we're actually surrendering into them. We're acknowledging, okay, my body actually has this figured out more than I ever could, and therefore I'm gonna actually let go and trust something bigger than me, trust that my body knows what it's doing. And that is a boundary with food. It's just not coming from the same obsessive mental place anymore.
I love how you describe that, and I'm with you. I think even early on, before I really knew anything about health, before I started this journey, I sensed that there was something very wrong with the calorie model. I remember when I was an athlete, when I was a hockey player, I'm a little guy. I played at like 155 pounds, but in the off season, when we're training hard, trying to build muscle, I would be eating, counting calories, like 4,000 plus calories a day to maybe put on 5 pounds over the summer. And I would look at my teammates, these big 200, 220 pound guys who would be eating a bowl of cereal for breakfast, a turkey sandwich for lunch, and 2 chicken breasts and some broccoli for dinner. Mm-hmm. And they would tell me, I can't lift this heavy because I'm putting on too much weight. And I'd be like, what do you mean? You're eating like 700 calories a day. Uh-huh. And they'd go, no, I've put on like 20 pounds this summer. And so something in my experience told me that, no, there's something very off about what we've been told about how the body actually utilizes what we put into it. Mm-hmm. And I think, as you described, it really is kind of an oversimplified model. It's a measure of heat energy. And so it assumes that the body is only this giant combustion engine that takes what we put in and it burns it for heat energy and utilizes that energy. When in reality, we are these complex multidimensional beings, and the way our body functions is sort of this total of all of these interactions of unseen subtle energies, life force, spiritual energies, things that we can't account for in a purely physical model, is all of this internal circuitry and how the different parts of us work together. And kind of what you said earlier is 100 calorie apple is not the same as 100 calorie granola bar that's been sitting on the shelf for a year and a half.
Yeah.
The apple is a living food. It's got life force, it's got enzymes, and when we put it in our mouth, the effect it's going to have is immeasurably different.
Yeah.
And so it really is about what you said, learning to connect with that inner compass, going within, trusting that the body has it all figured out.
Because you feel different when you eat an apple versus a granola bar. Like, even if you didn't know logically that there was a difference in the processing or the package, like, I know I would feel different, and I do feel different when I eat whole foods versus, I call them soul foods, things that are, you know, here for pleasure and not necessarily health. Like, my body feels different.
Oh, absolutely. And so I love how you laid that out with the food, but I also want to address some of the deeper root causes.
Yeah.
As we sort of touched upon earlier, but you mentioned how it's about connecting to ourselves. It's about going deep within. It's about feeling, trusting that true soul intuition. But I think for a lot of us, we've experienced big T or little T traumas. We all have limiting beliefs. We have emotional wounds, other things that drive our behaviors. And so let's talk about how we get to the deeper core of what's making that happen and what's driving the thoughts, what's driving the emotions, so we can come to a more balanced place, a more objective spot, which we can operate from. So what do you see in clients? Let's start with, what are the core reasons, if we really were to distill it down, what are the core reasons that we have a unhealthy or dysfunctional relationship with food or our bodies?
Yeah, huge. So the big umbrella over all of it is nervous system dysregulation, because when our nervous system is dysregulated, which essentially means we're not accessing that place of rest, digest, safety as often as we need to. It doesn't mean we need to live there 24/7, but maybe we're spending a lot of our time in fight or flight, or in shutdown, or in freeze, or in a blended state. And so we are chronically kind of going in and out of dysregulation. And because of that, we've learned to use food as a regulating tool to try and help our nervous systems regulate, because eating is a very regulating process. Even infants, one of the first ways that we're soothed as infants is through breast milk and feeding. And so we make this connection right from the beginning that food equals safety. And so when we're experiencing dysregulation in the nervous system, a lot of us lean on food outside of the boundaries of the body, outside of hunger, because it creates a flood of neurotransmitters that feel good. Chewing actually activates the vagus nerve, which creates a feeling of safety temporarily. And so that is like the bigger picture, is that we've created a link between eating and regulation, because we can have regulation or dysregulation without eating. And this is like natural eaters, like kids, like naturally thin people that you see. It's not that they never feel emotions or they never feel stressed. It's just that they don't use food to regulate that stress. They might have other unhealthy coping mechanisms. I'm not saying these people are perfect, but they're not using food for that regulation. And so that's like the overarching umbrella. But then underneath that, I always ask, like, why is the nervous system so dysregulated in the first place? And this is where we really go into, I've identified 8 root causes in my clients that I've seen over and over and over again that are contributing to food struggles and nervous system dysregulation. And these are things like perfectionism, control, a lack of safety in the body, a lack of self-worth, being a people pleaser, having a scarcity mindset instead of an abundance mindset, and maybe forgetting some, a lack of pleasure. So these are like the root causes that really drive dysregulation. And these root causes are unhealed parts inside of us. So these are parts of us that are trying to, you know, save the day through different actions that are not necessarily aligned with our higher selves or who we're meant to be. So the people pleaser in us, she's actually trying to help us feel safe by avoiding our own needs and prioritizing others. The perfectionist in me is trying to keep me safe by keeping everything ordered and organized so I don't have to feel the pain of not enoughness. The control freak in me is trying to keep everything controlled and within my ability so that way I don't have to feel the fear of things falling apart and the fear of the unknown. And so those are those like root causes that have everything to do with food and everything else in life, and are also really driving dysregulation. Because if we have chronic perfectionism, it's going to be very hard to relax and feel safe and calm in our nervous system, because there's that chronic, like, everything needs to be perfect and I can't rest until it is perfect.
Yeah, and I love how you bring up how the things like people pleasing, perfectionism, these are all, even though these might be driving our food choices, it goes even deeper than this, because even these things, they're self-preservation. Mm-hmm. Defense mechanisms, solutions that we came up with at a very young age to get our needs met and to try to feel safe and secure in the world. And so there's layers and layers and layers, and what we have the privilege of doing is diving deep within these layers, healing them, allowing them to peel back. And yes, it's uncomfortable. Yes, it takes time. But this is the core roots of the symptom, you could say, that the surface level actions, they can't help but change when you change at a deep level. Yeah. And I think when we talk about nervous system, this is a great transition into the topic of somatics. And somatics is kind of another one of those things that's becoming big and trendy, and everybody has a different sort of definition and way of applying it. So I would love to hear what your definition of somatics is and how you use that to help clients.
Yeah, so somatics, even the root of the word soma, just means the body. It refers to the body. And so my version of somatics, like you said, everyone has their own, is really processing things through the body instead of the head, and letting emotions and energy and, you know, parts of us actually be felt and held in our bodies, and completing that loop in a body level instead of just mentally processing it. So instead of just sitting in a therapist's office and talking about all this stuff that happened in your past and then being like, okay, time to go home, it's like, okay, you tell me the story, but then where do you feel that in your body? Because there is a feeling that's lingering there. There's molecules of emotion in your body that are vibrating in a certain pattern linked to this feeling. And the only way to actually release that story, we could sit in therapy for our whole lives and talk about it, but the only way to really create resolution is through meeting the sensation in the body and creating enough safety that that feeling can actually complete the loop. So I kind of think about it like a computer that has like a million tabs open and they all have that loading loop on them. And each one of those tabs is a memory, a trauma, an experience, something that happened in your past that never fully got processed. So it's just loading. And eventually we have like so many tabs open on our computer that the computer can literally shut down, like it overheats and shuts down. And that's kind of like going into depression or going into collapse or having that like intense mental health crisis or binge eating or overeating. Like there's just this extreme behavior happening because the computer is overwhelmed. And so what we do through Somatics is we open up each tab and we let the page load. Like we complete the loop. We let the system process fully and then we close the tab because it's loaded, it's fine, it's done. And that looks like a lot of times like creating sound and vocalization. It can look like breathing patterns. It can look like movement and dance and shaking and not very organized, quote unquote beautiful dance, but more like chaotic, kind of like tantrum throwing movement that just allows energy to be moved through the body. And that is something that I use with all of my clients when I'm teaching them how to feel and process current present emotions through their body, as well as past parts of them and things that are being stored and held in their body. So that way we create a clear channel that isn't clogged with so much unprocessed emotion. Because when we have unprocessed emotion in our channel, that's when we want to eat when we're not hungry. Because it's like, oh, I feel uncomfortable. There's all this stuff that I'm holding on to. Like, let me just eat to fill this space. Versus if we know how to feel somatically and we know how to clear our channel constantly every single day, there's not this urge to, you know, fill our body with so much food, or the opposite, an urge to not eat because it feels too overwhelming. There's more of that deep connection to that normal eating rhythm because the channel is clear.
That makes so much sense. And I love how you describe that. I think it really is, at its core, to me, somatics is about separating the sensation from the story, the actual sensation in the body from the emotion. Uh-huh. And it's teaching people that rather than getting stuck in the head thinking about their problems or running away from their anxiety, depression, if you really help them to feel into it and be present with the feeling, they come to the realization that, oh, wait, what I call anxiety is really just this thing that I'm feeling in my body. And if I really break it down, it's okay, maybe I feel a little tightness in my chest. Maybe I feel a contraction in my gut. Maybe there's some heat radiating from my cheeks and my breathing increases, but actually I'm okay. I'm safe. It's safe to feel those sensations in the body. And what was really causing all this fear and resistance was this story that I don't want to feel anxious. I don't want to feel unworthy. I don't want to feel rejected. And just that breakthrough alone can be life-changing for people, learning to separate those things out, to know that it's safe to feel unsafe, that when you really actually embrace the feeling and allow it fully, only then does it dissipate and process fully and kind of complete that loop. I love how you describe that it just wants to complete its natural loop. And when it's done, it's done. The emotion passes, because really thinking and being in the head is just a way of avoiding feeling. And I see that so often with overthinkers is, okay, what are you trying to avoid by overthinking? What's the emotion that you're not allowing yourself to feel? And this is why, just like you said, things like therapy can just keep people in the loop of overthinking without really resolving the problem. And it takes so much energy to repress those emotions and hold them down. It's like trying to hold a beach ball or a basketball underwater. Eventually it's gonna come up, it's gonna break through the surface, and you're gonna face your stuff one way or another. But the more you allow yourself to process the emotions through the body and release, you actually experience this freeing up of your own energy. And now you can pour that into creativity and fun and relationships and work, whatever it may be.
Yeah. Everything you said about the feeling feelings as sensations is so spot on. And just a memory that's coming up for me, because I work and I still work with my own somatic coach. And that's truly how I like got into all of this, was my own transformation through it. And I can tell you the time that I felt the most worthy and whole, like in my whole life, was in a session with her where she created the space for me to sit with the not enoughness. And I had this whole story of like, I'm unworthy, I'm not enough, I'm not beautiful enough, I'm not thin enough, all of these things. And instead of trying to like convince me that that wasn't true, which is what everybody else had done in the past, you know, like, you're beautiful, you are enough.
Yeah,
like,
that friend who says, yeah, you're sad, and they're like, no, it's okay, don't be sad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can't wait to be a mom one day, because I'm so excited to like not do that. Like, let my kids feel their feelings. But she let me go into the feeling. She was like, where do you feel that in your body? Where is the not enoughness? Where does it live? And, you know, just like we've done so many other times with all these other feelings. And I like sat with it, just like in the middle of it. And of course, like all feelings, it dissolves into love. And what took its place was this deep feeling of enoughness. And the only way for me to get to that point was through feeling the feeling of not enoughness. Like, I had to sit with the feeling of like, I'm a loser and nobody's ever going to love me and I'm fat and I'm ugly and I'm a horrible person. Like, I had to sit with that. And of course, it's not a true story, but I didn't need somebody to convince me that it wasn't a true story. I needed to feel my way through that somatic sensation to get to the other side, which is love and truth and connection again.
And that's the strange paradox, I think, of transformation, is that the point of the most pain and resistance is actually the doorway into your greatest freedom.
Yeah.
And experiencing who you are and unlocking your greatest gifts to share with the world. Mm. And so I also want to kind of ground this concept, because I understand it can be very foreign and new to a lot of people. So I want to kind of ground this in and make it practical. And for the people who are like, okay, I get that, but my feelings, they feel overwhelming. They feel like they're never going to stop. Maybe I find myself eating something that I know I probably shouldn't eat. And then it's like, okay, now I feel this guilt, like, I shouldn't do this. Now I'm not going to feel good. I'm not going to be as sharp as I want to be. All these negative loops. So when you see people like this, somebody comes to you for help, how do you walk them through this? What tools do you use? How are you talking them off of this ledge of guilt and shame and regret?
Yeah. The first thing is rewriting the story. I know this isn't a nervous system thing, but we have to rewrite the story that there is good and bad foods and good and bad eating patterns, because the only time we feel guilty is if we feel like we're doing something wrong or bad. And so if we take the bad off of the shelf, there is no need for guilt. It's like every moment, it's me and food, and I'm choosing to the best of my ability how to nourish my body in this moment. And if I had no rules around food and there were no bad foods, I would never feel guilty for eating. And so it's like, because most of my clients come to me with a whole long list of food rules. These are the foods that I should be eating. These are the foods that I shouldn't be eating. These are foods that are good for me. These are foods that are bad for me. And I, of course, this is another thing that I hate about intuitive eating. It's like some people will say, all foods are equal. All foods are neutral. And I don't agree with that. There are foods that are better for our body than others. Like, that's a known fact.
Agreed.
However, we can have emotional neutrality with it. And we can see, I call them soul foods, foods that are maybe not as healthy, quote unquote, but they nourish a different aspect of us. They nourish the nostalgic part of us. They nourish, you know, the soul part of us that is here to experience all the little parts of earth and pleasure in those ways. We can see those foods as having a positive value in our life, even if the value isn't contributing to health. And so it's not that foods are not healthy or unhealthy. It's just there's body foods and there's soul foods, and we don't need to feel bad about eating soul foods when it's coming from a connected, aligned choice. Because we can eat soul foods disconnected from dysregulation, from parts of us that are trying to seek relief in food, or we can eat it from regulation, we can eat it from connection, we can eat it because it truly does feel like a loving choice to make, and I'm hungry and my body has space to receive that food. And so that's the first thing with getting out of that guilt pattern. But then deeper than that, with like, where do we start with the feelings and all of that? Before we even go into feeling our feelings, it's really important that we have a sense of safety in place, or at least we're working towards building safety. Just like how we don't get in a car and we don't buckle, like everyone says safety first, like buckle up, you gotta buckle up before you go in a car. It's like we have to have some baseline of safety in the nervous system before we start venturing into this whole world of feeling our feelings and processing stuck emotions and all of that, because it's amazing and it can be very overwhelming, like you said. It can be a lot, it can bring up a lot of memories and suppressed things, and we have to know what we're doing. Like, we have to have some navigation in place. And so where I start with my clients is always with the safety bucket and putting things into their nervous system, into their life, into their routine that act as anchors that help create little micro moments of regulation. So that way they have a bigger, like, bucket to pour from. It's like, okay, my cup is already filled with a little bit of safety. And so now when I go into the guilt that I'm feeling after I overeat, or I go into this memory from childhood where I didn't feel like I was enough, we're not going into it completely like raw and vulnerable and open. There's like a backbone to our nervous system. So I know this is not very tangible and practical because it's so hard for me to explain it without like giving away everything that I, you know, charge customers for, but that's essentially
it's important stuff for people to understand, like, what's really going on. Because I think a lot of times if you just give the practice, people are like, that seems too easy. Like, why am I paying for this?
Yeah, totally.
But so I think it's as important, the prerequisite knowledge of what's really happening in the nervous system.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because I think that's a common thing that's happening online right now, is there's so much talk about nervous system regulation and feeling your feelings and somatics, and people are like trying to do it on their own, which I'm always an advocate for hiring a coach or a therapist or a support person. Like, this is what I do, this is why I still work with my coach, because you need to have somebody to hold that container for you when you're venturing into these worlds.
Yeah, there's a level of transformation that happens with another person in a container that you can't get to and you can't access within yourself. And I continue to find this as well. There's just something powerful about the transformation that happens. But I didn't mean to cut you off. Mm-hmm. I feel like you're right in the middle of describing sort of your process. So feel free to continue with that.
Yeah, I think just the importance of having, like you said, a support system, because that is a form of safety. When we're talking about creating a foundation of safety before we go into all of the stuff that needs to be healed, community and co-regulation is one of the biggest feelings or cues of safety to our nervous system. Like, we have evolved to be in connection, to be in community. And when we feel held by somebody who is giving their undivided attention to us and is like a safe, loving person that we feel safe around, instantly our nervous system relaxes a little bit. Like, it's something that happens automatically. And so just by being in a container with a coach or a therapist, like, you're creating a little bit of safety, which is going to give you more of that ability to navigate those suppressed feelings and those things that are coming up and actually have healing and resolution instead of just feeling like you're kind of stuck in that loop.
And it's kind of that thing, like, your body and your mind will only allow things to come up to the degree that it feels safe.
So
the larger container you can create of safety, the more that you'll be shown, the more powerful your transformation will be, the more of yourself that you can access. And creating that safety, it doesn't have to be a hard thing. It could be something as simple as, you know, look around your room and find something that makes you feel nourished, or think of somebody who you really love and you feel cared about. And so they're not these esoteric, super secret practices that we're privy to, other people aren't, but there's just something so powerful about being held by somebody else.
Yeah.
I also love how you touched upon the topic of the body foods versus the soul foods. And I'm with you. I think that no, all foods are not created equal. I don't think you can make that argument, but I also don't think it's about being perfect. I kind of view it like a spectrum. Kind of, do you want to be extremely disciplined with the body foods and function towards 100% of your potential? Or, you know, I know for a lot of people, it's I want to be healthy, but I also want to travel and eat out at nice restaurants and enjoy the pleasures of life. And so I think it's like it's a choice of where do you want to fall on the spectrum. In terms of discipline and functionality and being able to be the most that you could be. So what's your philosophy when it comes to balancing discipline with enjoyment of life?
Yeah, the ironic thing for me, and I know everyone's different, but this is my story and many of my clients' story, is the less disciplined I was, the more my health improved. And I truly don't think it's because of the food. I think it's because of my nervous system. And it depends on where that energy of discipline is coming for. I kind of like the word devotion more. It's like, if it's coming from this very loving, like, I'm so connected to my body and eating in this very quote-unquote clean way in this season of life is what feels so good to me, like, amazing. You're probably going to have incredible results from that. But for a lot of women out there, I know that it's not coming from that place, and this was the case for me. It was coming from I need to eat perfectly so that way I have perfect health, perfect skin, and I'm thin. And it's like that energy kept my health a mess. It kept my gut a mess. I had acne, like my hair was falling out. My thyroid was a mess because the energy was restriction. The energy was deprivation. The energy was control. It was perfection. It was like me putting myself into a box. And whenever I would go out with friends, I would take my own food, or I would like tell myself I can't have that. Like there was so much of this depriving energy to it that of course it destroyed my health. Like I think eating perfectly clean from that energy is so much worse for your health than eating like McDonald's every day, but feeling so calm and connected and in love with life and kind of like that honeymoon phase of being in a relationship. If you have that energy in your body, I really believe you could eat anything and be fine, because I really do think that the energy and the emotion and the nervous system trumps the physical. And I know that can be hard to wrap our minds around, but I mean, we could break down the molecules of soul food and it really all comes back to atoms and molecules, and the way that those molecules behave in our body is determined by our thoughts, feelings, and nervous system. And so I think sometimes just knowing that you can have health and you can have a body that feels good to you, if you want to be lean and slim, like you can have that, you can want that without eating perfectly. Like it's not like you have to choose either or. You don't have to choose the perfect, rigid, incredibly organic, high quality diet and the health I want, or like the food freedom world and eating junk all the time and having excess weight on my body that doesn't feel good. Like, it's not like you're picking between the two. You can actually have both. You can have health, you can have a lean body, and you can have this flexibility with food where you're enjoying body foods and soul foods in an amount that feels good to your body. And like, what if that was actually the path to health? Like, what if it wasn't about the perfection, but it was about the nervous system that's guiding your choices more?
Wow, yeah. I love the distinction too between devotion and discipline, because I think you're right that discipline does have this connotation that you have to give something up or have more willpower or force yourself. And I do believe that it really is the emotions we come from as opposed to the physical food we're eating. And we're not saying that people should eat McDonald's every day. Like, we need to be honest with ourselves, because I know there are people who do it in the name of food freedom and they say, I eat junk and I'm just so in love with life. I feel bliss and so I'm healthy. But it's like, probably not.
Yeah. Well, they probably don't. They're probably disconnected from their body, because if you have a clear connection between the vagus nerve, like brain to body, brain to gut, if you ate McDonald's every day for a year, you would feel awful.
Right. Right. So we do have to have some objectivity and be able to evaluate ourselves honestly to to know where our motivations are truly coming from. But I think it really is, it does come back to why we are doing it. Are we doing it out of love, or are we doing it out of fear? Do you work out because you love your body? Do you work out because you hate your body?
Yeah.
Are you healthy because you're afraid of the toxins in the environment and the heavy metals in the water and then the mold in your house? Or are you doing it because you want to live an amazing existence? And I think that we do need to move beyond the idea that we have to sacrifice our freedom in the name of discipline or being healthy. And I think this is one of the biggest reasons that people don't change or are hesitant to get into this, is because of this innate human fear that we have to give something up in order to have something else. But my message and what I want people to get out of this is that, yes, it will take discipline at first, but I think it's Michael Beckwith who says it starts as discipline, but it turns into blissipline as you learn to love it, and it becomes a part of who you are and what you do. And on the other side of discipline and blissipline, you find that the temporary satisfaction and the pursuit of fleeting pleasures that we thought were freedom will actually be eclipsed by an experience of something far greater, a lasting fulfillment, a permeating sense of well-being that is not dependent on anything outside of us, this source of energy and inspiration from within that you never knew existed. And I think this really is the human story and the theme of every hero's journey, really, that you must give something up and die to yourself so that you can discover a far greater treasure that was always within you.
Yeah. So well said, Chad. And what's coming up for me is the reality of feeling and how messy that is, and like living life from an open heart that's willing to feel, that isn't buffering with food. Like that, of course, brings so much pleasure and joy that's incomparable to food, but it's also vulnerable and raw. And that's exactly what you're saying. It's like, I think a lot of people are looking for the magic exit button of like, I'm in pain right now, let me just like pound this easy button of food and I'll get all this pleasure. But then it creates pain and a stomach full of food. Like we haven't changed it at all. And we think that, okay, there's this like, I'm missing something. I'm missing this like this magic button that is going to give me this release from all this pain, when the answer, like we said, is actually being with the pain and being okay with the pain, because at least now you don't have pain and a stomach full of food. Like you just have pain, and that's life.
Boom, right there.
That's it. And I would choose that, you know, now, like now having lived that, I would choose that option over the former, like, or the latter.
No, you're right. Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. And so just to kind of zoom out before we start to wrap things up, I think there are obviously a lot of people who are working to improve themselves and their health, which is super inspiring and uplifting and encouraging. But I think there's some people who might be hesitant. They're thinking, well, you know, I make it through the day just fine on my Red Bull and Taco Bell, so why should I care about this? Why does it matter? I don't want to give up the things that I have right now. So what's your opinion on this? Why should people, and especially young people today, care about their health, and what motivation should they have?
Yeah, it's tricky because I know you know this too. Like as a coach, I never force somebody to be where they're not at. And if someone's not ready to change, okay, like ride that ride.
You can't force it.
Yeah. Like it'll happen when it's timing for it to happen. And the body keeps the score, as they say. And there will come a point where your choices will add up and you will reach a point. I mean, this is for me. Like I lived disconnected from my body and my nervous system and all the things for so many years until I had like a rock bottom moment and realized that it was time to make a change. And I believe that that rock bottom happens for everyone in their own timing. However, I will say that being on the other side of this now and knowing how I feel in my body now compared to, you know, even a few years ago, truly the best decision I ever made in my entire life was choosing to do the deeper work and choosing to heal these parts and do the nervous system work and heal my relationship with food. Not because of the way that my body changed or the way that my health changed or like any of that, but because of the deep freedom that I have in my life now to be myself fully. And I always felt like I was just like so like almost like I hadn't landed in my body fully. Like I was kind of, it felt uncomfortable to like fully be in my body. And through all of this work and through, you know, improving my health, like I feel so fully present in myself that I'm a different person when I meet new people and I'm creating new connections, or when I do interviews like this, or when I'm building my business. Like all of these things that are happening in my life that are like dreams that I didn't think would be possible now feel so tangible and so accessible because I feel so safe in myself and I feel so connected to who I am. And like that is the gift that I think is bigger than any health transformation or body transformation or anything. It's how would it feel to you to have a life where literally anything felt possible because you felt so connected to yourself and so rooted in who you were? Like that, imagine that. That's, it's incredible. Like anything is possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is the gift. And that's why we're here. That's why we do what we do and why we find this work so fulfilling. So That's our hope for all of you. Yeah. Before we ask the final two questions, where can people find you, Ashlyn? Where can they learn more about any offerings you might have?
Yeah, I show up on Instagram every day. I, you know, probably should reevaluate my relationship with social media, but I'm on there every single day. My username is heart.led.wellness. And then I also have a podcast called the Heart-Led Wellness Podcast, where I post episodes every week. And then my website, heartledwellness.com, is a great place to look at heart-led eating, which is my 12-week course and group coaching program that walks students through healing their relationship with food, going into the nervous system work and the deeper healing of those root causes, and then learning how to eat like a natural eater, like a kid, like a naturally lean woman, so you can have that freedom and the body that feels good to you. You can find all of that at heartledwellness.com.
Awesome. And our final two questions that we ask everyone, first, in the spirit of this being the Supernatural Podcast, what is your definition of living an extraordinary life?
Ooh. I would say living a life that feels like living a life with your heart open and not, it comes back to not buffering yourself from life. Like I think for me, if I get to the end of my life, I'm going to feel so like proud of myself and feel like it was extraordinary if I didn't avoid anything in life. Like I didn't avoid the difficult conversations or the difficult feelings, but I also didn't avoid the beautiful things because I was scared of them. Like just that heart open, I'm willing to walk through any season with an open heart. I think that takes a lot of bravery and courage and feels kind of extraordinary to me.
Beautiful. And as you well know, this is a very delicate time for humanity, a very challenging one, full of change and turmoil for a lot of people. So if you could share one message with humanity at this time, what would that be?
I would say be willing to look beneath the surface, not just in yourself, but in the world and what's going on in life. Like, come at everything with the question of what's actually going on here. And that will give you so much guidance with what's happening, you know, politically and, you know, physically in our world. Like what are the motivations behind this? What's actually happening? But then also within yourself, okay, I'm, you know, disconnecting from myself in this moment. I'm chasing momentary pleasure. Like what's going on? What's beneath the hood? What's happening? What's here for me? Just keep asking yourself those questions so you can dig deeper and get to the roots of things, instead of we could spend all day talking about the news and all the things that are going on and, you know, all of your habits that you want to break. Like, we can do that, but I think that that's so surface level, and let's all, if we all go deeper, I think that's when real transformation would happen on our planet.
Outstanding answer.
Thank you.
And I just want to say thank you for taking the time to come on the podcast. This has been an illuminating, nourishing, life-giving conversation. I know I feel very energized and inspired right now. And I learned so much, and it was a pleasure having you. So thank you so much. And we'll definitely have to do this again and continue our conversations. And
absolutely.
I am excited to see the work that you continue to do with people and the results that you're giving clients. This is true life-changing stuff. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Chad. Likewise. And I feel just as energized. And so I feel like I need to go run right now. So much energy. Thank you.
Well, with that, we will sign off till next time. Hope you guys found this conversation inspiring and got some valuable information out of this. If you did, leave us a rating, leave us a review, share it with a friend, whatever you feel called to do. But thank you for tuning in this conversation. We'll see you guys soon.